I was exhausted, and there was still so much art to create, and I felt the ever-oppressing weight of the deadline looming over my shoulders. Friday the 13th was so close, yet there were still so many more toys to paint and sculpt, paintings to finish, and secret cult activities to finalize. It was also almost Inner Monster Monday, and in order to feel like I'm not going crazy, I decided to do an episode rehash on sustainability. Because after all, my name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast. Hello everyone, I just wanted to pop in real quick to let you know that I am working on another episode for next week, but if you are not following me on Instagram at Rit Kitagawa or on Patreon at patreon.com/RitKitagawa, you might not know that I'm working to release 13 new pieces of art in celebration of Friday the 13th. That's coming up this Friday. I'm also planning on kicking off the Order of the Dark Wheel, a cult that is totally not a cult worshipping seven evil gods who, when resurrected, will trigger a world-ending catastrophe. Seriously, there is no evil god worship. It's really more of a friendly social club where I'll get to legally do giveaways. And this is also totally not an attempt to skirt around rules and legalities around offering raffles as part of Patreon rewards. It's literally just a fun social club. Anyway, that's all happening on Friday the 13th. More information on Instagram and Patreon, so come celebrate dark artist style. And again, all of this, all the details, all of the Order of the Dark Wheel stuff, it's all happening on Patreon and on Instagram, both at Rick Kitagawa. So, because I'm prepping for all of this and totally am swamped, here is an older episode from February of this year around the Hydra and sustainability. So thank you again, and I will see you next week for a brand new episode. Until then, enjoy. I had just finished digging up the stump of the old blackened tree in the corner of the lot at the end of Walker Street. I wiped my forehead with my arm and swung the pickaxe up and over my shoulder. As I stepped past the upturned dirt, the discarded, twisted bike, and the chunks of splintered wood, I heard a sudden hissing. I spun around and grabbed the pickaxe in both hands. Out of the tall grass, an iridescent, black, two-headed snake as thick as a log slithered out. Its purplish tongue darted in and out as it tasted the air, and its glowing red eyes locked on me. I took a step back, and the serpent moved closer. I froze, and the snake paused momentarily, then continued its advance. I gripped the pickaxe tighter and took a step back and braced myself for an attack. The snake pulled back and I swung, driving the pick down. I had anticipated the strike, and the pick plunged through one of the snake's heads and deep into the ground. It let out a banshee-like wail, and I dropped the handle of the tool and stumbled backwards. The pickaxe pinned the snake in place, and I turned back and ran towards my truck. I grabbed my chainsaw from the truck bed and yanked on the cord as hard as I could. The saw sputtered to life, and I ran back towards the writhing snake. Its body was thrashing, trying to get itself free, and the full size of the snake came into view as it flattened the grass around it. It was easily the length of a freight truck, and at its thickest was as wide as a car tire. It was only a matter of time before that demonic snake would be free and extremely mad, so I ran up and sliced off one of the heads from the snake. Dark blood splattered the ground, and wanting to be sure the snake was dead, I sawed off the other head that was pinned to the ground. I stepped back as the body was now frantically spasming, spraying blood everywhere and cut free from its previous anchor. I was worried about the headless body thrashing blindly and smacking me and breaking a rib. I took a deep breath, turned back to my truck. I dug out my phone from my pocket, looked up the number of animal control, and dialed. As I stood there waiting for the call to connect, I felt an intense pain in the back of my leg. I fell to my knees and cried out, dropping my phone. I turned only to feel something rammed to my shoulder and then intense pain as if I had been stabbed. I looked up to see the jet black snake once again, but this time, it somehow had four heads. I swung my chainsaw again, lopping off one head, and the snake screeched, and then the other three heads bit me in rapid succession. I dropped the chainsaw and fell to the ground. My vision started going blurry, and I thought I saw the snake grow two heads from the wound I had just made. As the now five-headed snake reared back to finish me off, I could hear a voice coming from my phone asking me what the problem was, as I felt more fangs sink into my chest, neck, and limbs. All I could respond with was, "My name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast." Ever since I was a child, I've been a huge fan of serpents. I would constantly go through the National Audubon Society's field guide to reptiles and amphibians, not really to read, but to really just look at the photos. Besides the poison dart frog, my favorites were always the snakes. Growing up in Central California, the only snake I ever really had to worry about was the rattlesnake, and in most cases, they're going to let me know where they are, so they're fairly easy to avoid. However, in that book, I'd learn all about the gnarly cottonmouth, whose venom can just melt flesh, and the snake spurred my interest in snakes from around the world, especially the colorful ones, like the boom slang from Africa, or the spitting cobra. How wild is it that a snake can blind you from 6 feet away? This led me into exploring mythical snakes, from Quetzalcoatl to the topic of today, the mythical Hydra. So you might mostly be familiar with the Hydra as the logo from the fictional worldwide criminal group that the Avengers and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fight against in the Marvel Universe. However, their kind of weird chant that they always make before any nameless agent dies is a direct reference to the mythical Hydra, the Lurnian Hydra. Slain Lurnian Hydra was the second of the 12 tasks given to Heracles. And a quick aside, the strong mythical dude's name is Heracles in the original Greek telling, and is Hercules in the later romanization of his name, which Eddie Murphy obviously prefers in the 1996 movie The Nutty Professor. Hercules, Hercules! Anyway, back to the original mythology. The Hydra was a nine-headed serpent with venom that is so poisonous that even smelling it was toxic. The great beast hung out around Lake Lerna, which Hera, aka Heracles' stepmom, raised herself specifically to kill her stepchild, Heracles. The Nine Heads first gets credited to writing back in 600 BCE by Alcaeus, but I'm personally quite fond of the idea put forth in writing a century later that jumped the number of heads up to 50. I think it's so funny that even 2,600 years ago, people would still exaggerate, right? It's kind of like the modern day fishing story when you talk about how that 1 pound fish was a huge whopper. Anyway, so the tale goes that Heracles picks a fight with the Hydra by shooting flaming arrows into the cave in the marsh where the Hydra lived. The Hydra then comes out to engage Heracles, and the two fought in battle, with Heracles managing to slice off one of the heads. However, the Hydra's magic regenerative properties kicks in, and for every head that Heracles sliced off, two grew in its place. Eventually, Heracles withdraws, as the Hydra can't kill him, but he also can't kill the Hydra. He then recruits his nephew, Aeolus, one of the Argonauts, to help him out. An interesting quick side note, Aeolus, the nephew, actually has a really interesting relationship with his uncle, at least from modern standards, because besides helping out Heracles by cauterizing the necks of the Hydra after Heracles would cut off a head, Aeolus was also Heracles' lover, but also end up marrying Heracles' ex-wife. So regardless of their interesting relationship, Heracles and Aeolus end up slaying the Hydra, overcoming the creature's ability to regenerate and sustain itself even while being beheaded. While none of us can regenerate quite like a Hydra, if you think about it, we as humans do regenerate in a fashion. The human body is pretty awesome. Our dead skin cells are replaced by new ones, and as our cells die, they're replaced by a multiplication of healthy ones. In that context, the Hydra wasn't necessarily magical. Its cell division was just really, really fast. But since we're not mythological beings with super fast healing properties, we do need to take care of ourselves so that we don't outpace our own natural healing abilities. Sustainability is something that gets talked about a lot, but doesn't necessarily get practiced. And believe me, I should know. As someone who is constantly staying up later than he should, I chose to talk about this today from an entirely selfish reason. I know this is one area that I need to focus on myself. That said, I think we often preach sustainability or taking care of ourselves, and we focus on the talk about the how. Meditate more, or take a nap, or make sure your pint of ice cream is on hand. Right? Yes, ice cream comes in pints. That's right. Anyway, say the word sustainability, and we might think of spa days with massages or sleep apps that make sure we're getting a good night's rest. But I don't think we talk enough about why we so often lead such unsustainable lives. And I like getting to the root cause of things as opposed to only treating symptoms. So let's dive in, shall we? When I'm thinking about my own tendencies to overwork and forgo sustainable practices, I recognize that my drive is often rooted in our good old friend, imposter syndrome. My feeling of not being enough often makes me want to prove myself that I'm not as lazy or inept or unskilled or distracted or stupid as I think others think I am. This idea of proving one's worth is pretty common, but especially common in individuals who have experienced some sort of scarcity in their lives. Whether it's food, money, or love, when one grows up in an environment where they feel like they need to earn their keep, it's hard to change this line of thinking when you finally do have sufficient resources. It's also really common in environments where there are visual class disparities. I used to live in San Francisco, and I'm not sure if there's a wider class disparity in the United States than SF. You have people worth hundreds of millions of dollars eating at taquerias with homeless people sitting on the sidewalk literally right outside. It's no wonder that there is a culture of hustle and grinding and spending long hours in the office. Rich people are afraid of becoming poor, and the poor are constantly measuring what they don't have since the wealth of the rich is constantly in their face. This disparity causes fear, which propels many to act in a mindset of scarcity. When one feels this scarcity, like someone is going to come and take everything away, it's natural to tense up and pull things closer. We hustle harder to disrupt the system and wear our lack of sleep like a badge. We compete to leave the office later, to pseudo-complain about how we're overworked or how we're working on a second job as we grow our own side hustle. And in a scarce world, everyone is hustling. Everyone is trying to do deals and hack the system and disrupt an industry, and we're not really thinking about why we're even doing this. What's the point of racing to the finish line at the cost of our health and well-being? At the end of the day, while there are very real economic concerns in terms of making sure you have food and shelter, how much is enough? It's one thing to work really hard because you can't afford not to. But if we're privileged enough not to have to work ourselves to the bone, how can we reimagine what the world could be like if we were more kind to ourselves? Like I said earlier, I don't have all the answers, but I find reframing what I think of success is to be extremely helpful for myself. I like to move away from results-oriented thinking to process-oriented thinking. Winning a skee-ball championship or making $10 million might be nice goals, but there's a lot of factors external to ourselves that go into achieving those goals. Goals are nice to look forward to, but having them be the be-all end-all is what I believe causes unsustainable practices and behavior. If you're chasing results, you're unhappy if you don't get them. And while that might discourage some people, it might make others burn themselves out trying to get what they don't have. If you're focused on the process, you can enjoy the experience a lot more, as well as continue to improve at a steady, sustainable pace. For example, I'm still not a national champion in skee-ball. I've consistently placed in the top 16 for the past 2 years, but I've yet to even crack the top 8, let alone make it to the finals. But while being a national champion is my goal, the fact that I love the game and focus on consistent improvement and the study of psychological and physical factors involved in winning is what keeps me coming back. It's easy to give up after losing, but by reframing my goal around constant improvement and growth rather than winning a title, I can manage to devote my time and energy to a goal without burning out. And some might say that if you want to win, you need to sacrifice everything for that win. And some might accuse me of not being serious for not devoting more time to getting better if that's truly my goal. And I don't wholly disagree with that. But if you had to ask me, winning isn't my priority. Having fun and doing my best in competition is what I do care about, and that's my priority. My priority is also helping other people, spending time with my partner, friends, and family, and also enjoying free time, playing video games. So by reframing my goals towards being process-oriented rather than goal-oriented, that helps me keep in mind that sustainability needs to be a priority for me. Because how else will I play skee-ball when I'm 80 and no longer super competitive on a national level? I hope you'll join me on the process-oriented bandwagon, and I think a great way to start is to think about what activity would you want to be doing right before you die. Life is a marathon, not a sprint. Do you want to see your kids have grandchildren? Do you want to be making video games or painting on your deathbed? Do you want to be able to hike a mountain right before you croak? No matter what's important to you, how are you going to get there? And how can being sustainable set you up for success in the long term? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a monstrous day.